people say no to something if they don't see the value that you're providing. So for them, the money that they give you is worth more than the value that they're getting back. So again, as a entrepreneur, your role is to demonstrate that the value that you give them, whether it's information, whether it's actual services, is far greater than the money that they give you.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As a naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body balance, and inner badass, these are the themes we are exploring. Well, I'm really excited today to have a guest who is a true friend of mine. I say true friend as if they're not all true friends, but Uli Iserlo is someone that I just connected with the very first time I met him. He is interesting and has a compelling background and has an unrelenting passion for the work of naturopathic doctors and functional medicine practitioners. But our conversation today was not necessarily about that. Our conversation today was really viewing the world for entrepreneurs through the lens of what Uli calls a marketing technologist. Uli started his career as a chemist. He has a PhD in chemistry and transitioned to marketing in the online space when he became deeply fascinated in the advent of the internet. He is a talented man with a keen vision for how to grow your business. And today's episode, we've unofficially named the dumb mistakes entrepreneurs continue to make. And so we had this really fantastic jam session around some of the mistakes that we make as entrepreneurs, that we watch other people make as entrepreneurs, and our respective takes on how to fix them. It is truly my pleasure to introduce you to my friend, Uli Iserlo. Uli Iserlo, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Hey, so great to be with you and your listeners. Always great to connect.
Well, I'm really excited to have the opportunity to chat with you. And I just want to share with everybody that I met Uli the first time at the top of a mountain. And it was a mountain and it was an event that took place over the solar eclipse that happened a few years ago. And I was just immediately taken with your intelligence and your vision. And you do so much work in the realm of functional medicine, but you're also a master marketer and you have a background as a chemist, I believe. You've got a really interesting, is it chemistry? Am I right?
Yeah, okay, that's good. Correct.
You've got such an interesting story that really led you to where you are today and the work that you're doing in the world today. Can you share that with our listeners? Because I think the journey informs so much of the work that you're contributing into the world.
Yeah, absolutely. So, grew up in Germany and, that was my life for the first 24 years. My mom was actually one of the first female physicians running an ICU at a regional hospital. And, back in the 70s, that was certainly not the norm. And then from a societal perspective, really entrepreneurship wasn't really that emphasized in Germany. So I always had this underlying thing that I wanted to go to America and, experience what that's about. And so ultimately I came to the US for my PhD in chemistry, as you said, then worked for 10 years in big pharma, specifically in the area of Alzheimer's research. And then the internet came along and that really changed everything.
I love that you say that the internet came along as in like you're 95 years old and this cool thing called the internet came along, because I suspect that we're probably the same age. But what did the creation of the internet do in terms of your career, and why did it actually have any influence on it?
Well, what I was always sort of like technology minded, and again, from growing up in Germany, unlike so many Americans, I didn't have my lemonade stand or my first entrepreneurial foray. So it was really at probably age 26, 27 that I finally realized, oh man, this is something, there's a huge opportunity there. You have technology, you have marketing, and I realized very quickly, this is like invention of the Gutenberg printing press. You know, this is a once in a lifetime. This doesn't happen every, 100 or 200 years. So this is a game changer. And so a friend of mine dragged me to an internet marketing conference, and, it was just shiny object syndrome all over. And so I was kind of hooked, and suddenly my day job as a chemist became really a nuisance that I realized, like, oh man, I want to move into this. And so I started building websites for people back in 1998, hand coding HTML, really totally old school. There was no software there. And, over time people said, hey, you have a good visual eye, you have a sense of organization and structure. And I guess that comes from the chemist training that, you always have more than one backup plan. In chemistry, the assumption is it's not going to work, and it's not that you failed. It was just an early attempt at success. And so you always have to sort of have a strategy. Okay, if that doesn't work, what do I do then? What do I do then? And how do I prioritize all these competing agendas and arrange them in the most logical fashion? And so I think that helped me then develop websites. I built websites for diamond jewelers, for banks, for local businesses. And there was really no rhyme or reasons why I did anything. Whoever came on board and hired me, that's who I worked for. And then it was really back in 2014 that I really focused much more on functional medicine. I said, unless you're an integrative naturopathic or functional medicine, I'm not going to be working with you anymore. And so, again, I think I've gone through this whole notion of I don't want to niche down because I'm afraid of losing business. But the moment you do niche down, everything changes.
I want to talk about niching, mostly because I want you to keep saying niche and me to keep saying niche, because I'm from Canada and you're in New York. But we need to go back and say that again, because we're in a time where I think the world needs entrepreneurs now more than ever. But also as entrepreneurs, I feel like we're being challenged on an emotional level in a different way, because we don't have this huge net underneath us. We don't have this huge, there's not this massive amount of security in the world right now. However, I actually think it's also the time where the people who have the courage and step off the ledge and have that inner fortitude are the ones who are going to win. And one of the strategies that I think is a winning strategy right now is to select your niche. So can we just talk about what happened to you when you did that? Because it's an act of courage to make the decision to say that.
Yeah, I think it goes back to finally understanding, what is your purpose in life? What's your belief that fuel your work? Because you really need to have this front and center, because there's going to be dark times, as you mentioned. The entrepreneurial journey is not easy. And so you got to ask yourself, what is the golden thread that weaves through your life? How does business and life merge together? And for me, I happened to come across the evolution of medicine. They hired me. And again, it was just another project that I took on. And then I finally realized, oh, wait a minute. This is how medicine is supposed to be practiced. It's logical. There's a system there. It's like holistic. It really appealed to the chemist in me, because it's all about, once you understand the rules that govern the whole organism, the system, then you can make prediction and you are fairly certain that you get the outcome. And so I think when it comes to entrepreneurs, they don't have necessarily the understanding what the rules are or what the system is. And that's why it's so difficult for them to see the road ahead and to predict what's going to happen or predict how a marketing approach is going to be successful. So for me, niching down into functional medicine was really just a logical evolution, trained as a chemist, working in the pharmaceutical world, trying to address Alzheimer's. And I remember in 2004, my peer said, this Bredesen guy, this is all bogus. This is not going to work. Lifestyle changes. And so then, fast forward to 2011, when I left, I finally came to the senses, oh, okay, this is not something you can fix with a pill. And I was really disillusioned with big pharma at that point. So that jumping off into sort of the more marketing arena made a lot more sense. And so working with practitioners, I found it so much easier to be relevant to them, because they understand, oh, finally a website designer that truly gets me, that speaks fluently functional medicine. And so, you know, obviously I'd been a student of marketing all along, but then it really took on a life of its own that I really dedicated myself to be the marketing technologist in the functional medicine space, you know, working with many of today's leaders and, you know, speaking at events like, you know, yours or others. You know, you mentioned the meeting on the mountain, that was another one. So, you know, again, it was, I guess, a fortuitous turn of events that I ended up in functional medicine and found functional medicine in 2014. But in that moment, I knew this is my life's work. This is my niche. This is my calling. And I'm going all in on this. And I never looked back.
I love that. And I have a simple question. Have you always considered yourself an entrepreneur?
No, I would not say. I mean, up till the internet came along, 26, 27, I had no entrepreneurial bone in my body. I was like really more in the employee mindset. And then you go into pharma and, you know, it's your cog in the wheel, but you don't have any decision-making power. So once I kind of saw what the internet could allow you, and I think this is a big difference also coming to the US. In Germany, everyone asks you, well, in order to qualify this job, show me your diploma, show me your university degree. Oh, you don't have a PhD there? Nope, can't do this job. And in America, it's like, hey, if you can prove that you get results, nobody is going to ask you about your education. And so I guess that's the theme that we're seeing right now, that it's the entrepreneurs that really have the freedom to innovate and, you know, move the society forward. But it is a scary world because there is no school for entrepreneurism. You know, it's, you know, unless you consider the school of hard knocks. But, you know, that's what's so challenging, that you have to really take this as a courageous step forward and believe serving those people. And I do whatever it takes to make it happen.
I find it so fascinating to listen to you share your story, because as you were talking about being a chemist, I was like, I feel like there isn't a better example of the antithesis of an entrepreneur as being a chemist, because it's so rule oriented. Like, you can't rewrite the rules of chemistry. Believe me, I tried on multiple exams. You cannot rewrite them. It's like, it's very black and white. Whereas, and you might not, but the level of chemistry in which I engaged, it was very black and white. Whereas entrepreneurship, it's like, you guys can't see me, but I'm picking up this blank piece of paper. It's a blank slate. And yet you have to create rules and systems with no framework. So I can only imagine the challenge, because the training you would have had would not have been necessarily training that serves that entrepreneurial journey. Yes, but I love being able to see people, because you're like, yeah, yes, but.
But, so there is, you know, in chemistry, there's two arms. There's inorganic chemistry and then there's organic chemistry. And most people hate organic chemistry.
It's the only one I loved.
Yeah. And I probably know why that is. And so for me, it was the same way. In inorganic chemistry, everything has to be memorized. There's no rules. It's like, it's just whatever it is and you have to memorize it. In organic chemistry, you can get away by being lazy and only memorize 10 rules. And then you build the answer from scratch. So when I studied for exams,
I never memorized
anything. It's like I developed the answer in the exam from scratch. I had 10 rules, and based on the rules, I came up with the answer. And so what this trained me to is always look for the underlying rules. You know, what is governing consumer psychology? What makes somebody switch providers? How is somebody actually deciding to purchase anything or make any type of decision? And so once you understand what is motivating people, it's universal rules across cultures, across industries. Doesn't matter what service industry business you're in. Once you understand why somebody wants anything and what motivates people to say yes or no, you can then shape this ethically. And I think this is what makes me a good marketer, that I really am part technologist, knowing what can you actually do technologically, how can you use automation to make your life easier. But let's not discount the importance of psychology, about strategy, about shaping the narrative that people want to become part of your tribe and want to support you and want to co-create with you.
I couldn't have created a better segue. I love that, because what I want to unpack from that is, what are the underlying rules of entrepreneurship? Right now, because I think having come through 2020, the rules have shifted a little bit. The playing field has shifted. There is a strong requirement of mindset. There is a strong requirement of courageous spirit, but there are still tactics and strategies that I think hold true. So if we're looking at the landscape of where we are at right now, and we can delve into it specifically on a marketing level if you want to, what are some of the underlying rules and tenets that are driving and governing entrepreneurship where we stand today?
Yeah, I think the first for me is really the importance of nurture. That, you know, when you're selling a commodity, let's say you're a dentist, you're a chiropractor, maybe it's a med spa or Botox, consumers by and large know what they're buying. And so there's no need for a lot of nurture. As opposed to if you are in a field where it's like a lot softer, like health coaching, life coaching, right. Or as physician, when it comes to health, people don't understand what you're selling. So you have to nurture them a lot longer. You have to create the necessary trust that they can say to themselves and their peers that the money that I invested in this provider was well worth it. And, you know, I don't look like an idiot spending money on something that's obviously a scam. So there's a high need for nurture. And I feel so many entrepreneurs, they look at all these service-based businesses that's selling a commodity, and they're trying to take that kind of marketing ethos to their business, not realizing you have to nurture. This is an entirely different field. And so they're sort of going at marketing with the wrong toolkit. You know, and then they're wondering, why is this not working? It's like, well, it feels you're pitching too hard because you're operating like you're selling a commodity and you're not really nurturing. So you haven't even gone out on a series of dates with your customer, and yet here, first interaction, you already proposed the question. And, you know, what do you think is going to happen? They're going to say no.
Can we differentiate this idea of nurturing versus selling?
Oh, yeah. So I think, you know, when it comes to making sales, and, you know, I come at this from a very neutral perspective. Sales is not bad. It's just a transaction between two parties, and they agree that in exchange for money, they are receiving something of far greater value. And so people say no to something if they don't see the value that you're providing. So for them, the money that they give you is worth more than the value that they're getting back. So again, as a entrepreneur, your role is to demonstrate that the value that you give them, whether it's information, whether it's actual services, is far greater than the money that they give you. And so at that point, it's not really a commercial transaction anymore. People feel glad to give you the money because for them, it's a no-brainer. And so if you're selling commodities, you know, marketing is mostly advertising. Make a, you know, put an offer out there and sell. And that's why marketing and sales get oftentimes confused, because people associate it with being pushy or, you know, twisting people's arms. And I think when you really think about marketing, I see it as building relationship with people that you can help. And at the time you start the relationship, they may not know how you can help them. But I think when you look at your audience, you know, you put a vibe out there, and that allows certain people to see, ultimately, I can transact with them. But it's also always about building the relationship, creating connection, intimacy. And the more people you know, and the more you give and show people that you have their best interests at heart, ultimately, they feel comfortable enough to say yes with you. They certainly don't want somebody that's pushy and in their face and trying to use scarcity tactics to get them to buy anything. That's when they feel being sold to. And I think it's really just educating people and creating a connection and focus on that first. And then ultimately, that will naturally translate into one-on-one discussion. Hey, what do you do? How can you help? Oh, interesting. Maybe we should talk. So I think, you know, the big shift, you know, just to button this up.
No, do it. It's okay. I'm smiling because I love what you're just saying. So you just keep going. Yeah. Don't let me interrupt you.
So as a marketing technologist, most people think that it's all about automating everything. And I think there's this 80-20 rule that 80% of your marketing, of your education should probably be automated. And that can be you posting to social media. It could be having a YouTube channel. It's about repurposing different pieces of content. You know, like how you have your podcast and then you have outtakes and you create different snippets from it. So you're very efficient with how you educate people. And that can be an automated process, whether it's driven through true, you know, email automation systems or as a team, but it's not something that you have to do one-on-one all the time. But then I think most people forget that there's this 20% of one-on-one outreach. And so you will realize that most sales actually happen as a consequence of that outreach, of the Facebook messaging, of picking up the phone, of meeting people in person. It's that human element that ultimately gets somebody to say, yeah, let's partner up and together. And so I want to really put this out there that entrepreneurs understand it's really this marriage of 80% automation, 20% really custom one-on-one outreach. And that's where we find all the deals happening.
Totally. And honestly, it's how we met. It was because both of us had made this commitment that I'm actually just going to show up. I'm going to show up in person, which is a weird thing to say nowadays because we aren't able to do that. But we just consistently showed up and we became friends because we didn't just show up at one thing and have a nice chat at the top of a mountain. We showed up at numerous things over and over again and were able to foster and build that relationship. And in an era right now where we can't do that the same way, what are you finding actually to be most effective in terms of creating connection with people?
Yeah, for us, it's on one hand, you know, using social media. And I know this is sort of like right now, people feel very ambivalent about it. You know, I don't want to be on a platform with so many trolls and so much shenanigans going on. But sure. Ultimately, it's about you have to be where your customers are, where your future prospects are. So if most of your clients are on social media, that's where you have to be. And, you know, I firmly believe that with all the algorithm changes, people have to invest in being seen. You know, why would Facebook allow you 100% reach if you didn't pay anything for it? And so this is where this pay to play comes into play. And for us, it's really just promoting educational content out there that people see your stuff, your value, your leadership over and over again. And then, you know, ultimately, I think this should then translate people signing up for your lead magnets, for, you know, your email list so that you can then continue that nurture process. What we found though is that our team, me, we're reaching out probably to, you know, 400 people a week through Facebook Messenger, through email. It's totally one-on-one. It's totally manual. It's what Gary Vee calls scaling the unscalable. You know, it sounds insane to do it, but that is what moves the needle. You know, all our deals, they're not coming through an automated email sequence and people watching an automated webinar. It's really the result of doing the one-on-one. And it's not meaning that you have to go an extra mile. Oftentimes it's going an extra 4 inches. You know, it's like not that far that you have to go. And doesn't take that much time. It's just taking consistency.
Yeah, and I agree with you on the manual piece. I said this to someone the other day that, you know, we reached out to this person manually. And the word manual actually just gets me triggered. Like every time I do something manual and I engage with people, I really have to stop and go, you know, is this an intentional piece or is this we haven't created the right systems? And I want to be really clear, certainly within our business, we have a huge amount of success just like you because we reach out to people on a manual level. We create relationships. We follow their work. We pay them sincere compliments because we've been engaging in what they have been creating. And if we reach out to them and say, we'd love the opportunity to work with you, it's because we've actually been watching them and would love the opportunity to work with them. I think there's something really powerful behind that intent. So I love that you said that. And I actually was a bit relieved that you said that because some days I'm like, oh my gosh, are we like spending way too much time doing manual? But part of why we made that focus in our own business was because anything I've bought in the last 6 months has happened because people reached out to me, and it never felt sleazy. It never felt there really is an energy and authenticity to people who have been engaging in your work and are like, listen, I'd love the opportunity to work with you. So I love that you're doing that, Uli, because I look to you to see what you're doing and I want to make sure I'm on the same page.
Well, we're certainly metrics driven, and you know, it's what works. So I'm not arguing if it takes manual work. There's ways around it. Again, for those that feel overwhelmed, it's really, I think it's a sign of not having the clarity on knowing what to do next and what's important. You know, yes. What's important versus what's just busy work, and really delineating, do do I have to be the one doing this work, or can I delegate it to somebody on my team? You know, it's still part of my outreach and makes sense, but, you know, maybe it is introducing your salesperson or your business development person and, you know, have them have a conversation with them. You know, ultimately, what consumers want to feel is that you care about them, that you're interested in the connection first. And so when we reach out, it's never with any commercial language. It's like we let them ask us first, and shift the conversation to, you know, how can we work together, or I'd love to get on a call with you, etc. So it's always them asking first, and we're just interested on like helping them connect the dots and, you know, be helpful, connect them to other resources that we have. And so we have a commitment in our content marketing to lots of lead magnets. So every month we're creating a new lead magnet. It's very simple, but this is how we're building the list. This is my reason why I can actually email people. Hey, we just developed this new guide on videography.
Right.
You know, it's here if you want it. And over time, that is building your inbound marketing, how people come to your tribe. And then, you know, my team gets notified every time somebody opts in for something. They get a notification, this person has opted in for the lead magnet, and then they start a personal relationship. Hey, Uli wanted me to follow up with you, and then they start the one-on-one outreach. So people are already on the two tracks of being on an automated track that they can chart their own marketing adventure, they can decide what they want, and then on the other hand, there is this personal outreach that makes it powerful. Now, since we were talking about sort of like in this time, you know, what are some of the other important thing? I think more than ever, when you're being pulled in all these directions, you have to have the right team. You have to focus on hiring the right team, putting the people in the right position. And Corona was a big wake-up call for us. You know, there was people in my company that shouldn't even be in the company anymore. And the whole team is wondering, why is this person even have a job anymore? And so Corona really provided the impetus to look at, well, are people actually doing what they're great at? Because I think, you know, you should put people into positions where they can really shine. It's not necessarily that everyone has to be, you know, a jack of all trades. I think they should focus on their most amazing gifts. And so it was actually my wife that said, why is this person a project manager? He should be in sales. He's an he's an empath. He's like so great with people. What is he doing in project management? And the moment I moved him there, he just skyrocketed and it's like amazing. He's so much happier. And it's just recognizing having the people in the right position is just as important as having the right people on your team in the first place. And so I think if you are looking to get more done, getting more implemented, you can't just do it yourself as a solo entrepreneur. You have to have build a team around you. And it doesn't have to be a full-time team that is, you know, a full employee. It could be starting with, you know, hiring, contractors, you know, outsourcing simple things on an hourly basis. But I find that during Corona, I see so many practitioners where I can tell really this person has doubled down and actually become way more efficient, and other people have taken the summer off. And now 6 months later, you can see massive differences in their business. So it's not really making these heroic one-time big pushes. It's more like just slow and steady wins the race and just keep chipping away.
I love what you said there about making sure the right person is in the right position, because you can often have these people who are incredibly passionate, but what they're doing is not necessarily aligned to their core skill set. Do you have a system that you use with respect to that piece?
I wish I really had. You know, I really rely on my wife. She's my secret weapon, and she can read people so much better. They're saying, okay, this person needs to be here, this person needs to be there. And so I rely mostly on her. In hindsight, I don't know if there are really KPIs that you can measure whether somebody's there, but I think you just have to be really mindful of this and then really ask your team, hey, are you happy? And obviously most employees saying, yeah, I'm happy because they want to keep that job. But I think having a culture where you allow people to create their own job description, say, hey, I really love this one, or can we evolve this here, or can I shift my work to this person, and being flexible how things are done in your company. I think that's the biggest thing that COVID has taught us, that you have to be adaptable, that you have to figure things out. You have to stay with, you know, you can't be at the status quo and saying we've always done it this way. if it's not working, you got to change it. And, right. you know, you just want to figure out how to change it as fast as possible.
And that's the key part, is changing it as fast as possible. And I feel like that was a huge take home for me in 2020 and working with other practitioners, but also in my own business. Like, success really came to those people who changed it as quickly as possible and really relinquished and let go of this idea of, well, soon we'll be able to go back to the way it always was. I think this, when do things go back to normal, is this huge limiting belief in mindset right now. That's having a massive impact on people's businesses. What else have you observed over the course of the last year with the people who are winning right now?
I would say, you know, focusing really on great execution, because great execution beats great ideas every single day. And I don't know, I forget who it was that said it, maybe Warren Buffett, but you know, it's this idea that only action will change anything. And you know, again, working with healthcare practitioners, they know their patients can't get better if patients don't take action. So, you know, if nothing changes, nothing will change. And so I think, you know, you have to have a culture of taking action, deciding what is it that I can do today, what makes sense, where should I channel my resources. Too many people stay stuck with doing business as usual. And, you know, you have to really ask yourself, is this social media schedule still making sense? Is it serving me? Is it serving where I want to go? And maybe we're changing trajectory. We're pivoting. I mean, again, COVID told you, okay, you can't do hands-on services anymore, so you have to be more virtual. What do? You know, here comes the advent of group coaching and, you know, more virtual structures. And, you know, it's all these things that people have to react to, but ultimately, whoever implements fastest and best, you know, it doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be this Japanese concept of Kaizen, where it's iterative improvement. It's just do something, you know, start with a hypothesis of what you think is going to move the needle, do this, and then measure and see if it worked. And sometimes you're right, sometimes you're wrong. But in marketing specifically, there's no absolutes. There's no 100% wrong, 100% right. It's all shades of gray. So you just have to experiment and be open to experimenting. Mm-hmm. And I know that can be a lot of big challenge for perfectionists that want to put everything out perfect, the perfectly styled post, the perfectly crafted words, the perfect video. And I think perfection is really the enemy of progress. And again, you have to be willing to break something or be willing to apologize. I think if you go into this with an idea of co-creation, being, you know, transparent with your audience, saying, hey, we're just launching this new program. This is the first time we're doing it. You know, COVID comes around. This is not going to be perfect, but you have my promise that I will do everything to make it as good as it can be. And I'm looking at you to give me feedback on this. And I think if you start projects like this, everybody knows they're part of a co-creation environment. And, you know, I think that's all that's needed. And I think this is very hard. You know, as you said, you have to be courageous to go out there with something that's imperfect, with something where you're not entirely sure if it's going to work. But if the intent behind it is honest, if you share that intent and people know you as that person, then I think you're in the right place.
I really like this idea of co-creation, because I think that is so much of what this is about. And I'm sure you have the same conversation, because I have this with practitioners all the time. And they're like, I know, but what are the exact steps I need to follow to do this? And I'm like, well, here is the framework, but there are no rules. And as soon as we start to be looking to rules, I think that's where we get into trouble, because it really alienates any level of flexibility, which I think is a must for entrepreneurs. So I'd be remiss to not ask you this, because we have a marketing technologist on the call with us today for this interview. Where do we need to be looking moving into 2021, Uli, with respect to our marketing? What are our must-haves?
Yeah, I think, you know, you want to have a certain automation level in place. You know, you have a strategy. What do I say? Well, okay, let me backtrack. Number one, be clear about the message that you want to put out there into the world. You know, if you're clear, great, move on to step two. If not, I think go back to square one and really define what is the message that I would have put out there? What's the amazing gift that I have? You know, what does the world need to see from me? How can I step into that role and get really clear on this? Because that will really fuel everything else. And then step number two is, you know, okay, how does your audience actually understand that you have that gift? You know, I always say, you can't be the most amazing healer unless the world knows that you're the most amazing healer. So there's this dual role of, yes, you have to be a genius at what you do, but you also have to tell the world about it. And, you know, imagine Thomas Edison inventing the light bulb and never telling the world about it, right? Mm-hmm. We would still be in the dark ages. And so I think the same is true for any entrepreneur, that you have to have equal part being an innovator and amazing at your craft. And then the second part is letting the world know. And the letting the world know is really what I see as the marketing funnel. So have a social media game plan, have a website that is customer centric, get people onto your mailing list so you can then start nurturing them. And really, for a lot of people, they feel weird about, what do I post on social media? So we have a training that we developed over the last year that is really finally giving people a framework of, this is what you say on social media, in a way that it is valuable, but at the same time, it doesn't come across as salesy, because it's really just revitalizing people's mind of why they are stuck with a problem they have at hand, and what's a better way to look at this. Because people can't say yes to your solution if you're just proposing the same solution that they've already tried and didn't work. So getting clear on your marketing funnel and the technology is key. Having the right team in place, I think those are the core ingredients to have in play. And then I think the biggest thing that people need to focus on is their offer creation. Mm-hmm. And I know this is not necessarily marketing technology, but if your marketing is not working, it's because your offer is not sexy enough to your audience. They don't understand why now, why this person to buy from, and why this product. And so I think every great marketing campaign, every business success is ultimately coming down. Do you have a product that is really sexy, that people want, that you know, makes it a no-brainer? And so I think this is, again, as an entrepreneur, if you don't have this yet, if you don't have the commercial proof that people rave and love working with you, the reason why that's not happening is maybe because the offer is not compelling enough. It's too mm-hmm. lame, too similar to other offers, and really figuring out, what does the market need? Where's the hole in the market, and how can I serve that market?
Yeah, there's so much truth in what you just shared there, Uli, because I think that sometimes we fall in love with our own work and our own outcome, and we see it. And I see this in particular with practitioners, but it's really across the board. We're like, and you know, I can think of a number of different examples where people are like, but this is exactly what the person needs. Like, if I could just intervene right now, it would change their life. And the challenge is that it's really not about what you think the person needs. It's about what the person thinks they need. And the biggest disconnect that I see is in that misunderstanding. And then we fall in love with our marketing, and we put so much work into it that we're not willing to let go of it when we really should be acknowledging the fact that we're not, it's not a meeting of minds between what people are looking for and what it is that we are producing. And gosh, if there's one thing I would just really encourage people to do, is you have to be willing to let go. You have to be willing to let go when things aren't working, when people don't want it the way you've packaged it, and not be so attached to your videos you recorded and the sales page you made and the hours you put into that, and view it as a lesson, and then move on to something that actually impacts people's lives in a positive way.
Yeah, my first business coach, he said, Uli, do you really need a website to sell your services? And sure, a website makes it a lot easier, but technically, you just need to be on a phone with somebody. And so he challenged me to say, hey, just have discovery calls, talk to people. And I was pitching my services, and it was crickets. And then I said, anything else you have questions about? It's like, hey, tell me about this last thing. And then I went deeper. It's like, oh yeah, I'm interested in that. Next call, did the same thing, and I included the last thing. And it's like, oh, I'm not interested in the first thing. Tell me about this last thing. So over a series of 10, 15 calls, I optimized my offer. I said, okay, people are not interested in this. They all want this. And so then I focus on that. And, you know, that's really what needs to happen. And, you know, I've been in this space, you know, since 2014. Now, it was really only till, you know, maybe last year that I finally understood, this is what my audience wants, and this is what they're not getting anywhere else. And let's go all in on this. And so you have to constantly listen of what needs are not being met. What do they really want? What's their language telling you that they yearn for? And I totally agree. It's not what people need. It's what they want to give you money for, or what they perceive they need right now.
Right.
And this is the other part where we can tie it back into automation. people will make a purchasing decision when they are ready, not when you need the money. So you have to have the longevity to still be around in 6 months when that person is actually ready. So in the healthcare space, maybe somebody is going through something very traumatic right now, a divorce. They don't have time for your offer right now, but once they do this, then your offer is supremely relevant, but just not right now. So don't think that the person not buying your thing right now has anything to do with you. It just didn't fit into the agenda right now. And so I think this is another way where entrepreneurs have to be more compassionate with themselves, that it's not always you, it's what your customer wants.
So brilliant. And I kind of feel like we could jam on this all day long, but what I am going to do is I'm going to transition the interview to a component that I call our KPIs. And just like we have KPIs in our business, I believe that we have them in our lives as well. So I've got 5 rapid fire questions coming your way. You ready?
Yeah, let's go.
What's the most impactful book or conversation that you have read or had during the pandemic?
Oh, I would say, and this is not just during the pandemic, but I would say The Road Less Stupid by Keith Cunningham. And he is one of the foremost business advisors. And it's not a book that you read cover to cover, but it's a series of fireside chats to explore certain issues about your business. And his point is like, you know, let's prevent the dumb mistakes that can really sabotage your forward momentum. And, you know, if you can learn a lesson without getting punched in the face, then all the better.
All the better. What is the one thing you are most consistent with respect to your health?
Oh, you know, eating healthy and sleep. And obviously that's easy, you know, when you have a chef as a wife, but, you know, that's, you know, I would say hands down eating healthy.
What is something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know?
Well, I don't know. You know, my wife forces me into badass things like being serving as a target for a professional knife thrower without me knowing, but yeah.
Okay, that will definitely qualify. What do you do for fun or play?
I would say travel and seeking experiences, and that's really one of the bummers during this, you know, pandemic, that, you know, can't travel as much, have these experiences in exotic locales. But, you know, really looking forward to next year and resuming that. But I think ultimately, when you look back as an entrepreneur, you know, you work a lot of hours, so you have to put experiences in there, because that's at the end of the day that you remember, that's what makes you happy. And I think that needs to be part of the equation.
Absolutely. And last question for you, entrepreneurism, are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
No, I think it's learned for sure.
It's learned for sure. I love that there is zero consensus on the answer to this question. Uli Iserlo, it is a pleasure, like always, to have the opportunity to hang out with you. Where can I send people to learn more about the work you're doing in this world?
Yeah, I think the best place is online on our website at bigboost.marketing, .com, and online at Uli Iserlo, wherever, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. I'm all over the place.
He's in all the places, and we'll hook everyone up with links in our show notes. Uli, thank you so much for your time.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, that was such a juicy episode. I could jam for hours with my dear friend, Uli, and he has so much to offer the world. I love reaching out and connecting with entrepreneurs, as you know. And so if you are an entrepreneur looking to have a big mission in this world, please come and hang out with us. We are over in the Anthropology Collective on Facebook. This is a free Facebook group for women and entrepreneurs just like you. And to my practitioners in the crowd, Uli is someone who has really made incredible contributions to our respective industry. And he hangs out with the go-getters and those individuals who are really striving for greater impact. I hang out with those people too. And if you are a practitioner listening to us, I'd encourage you to come and hang out with your wolf pack. We are over in the Facebook group called Clinician Business Labs. And over there, we talk about how to be a badass in terms of mindset, your health, and your impact on the world. Like always, my name is Dr. Megan Walker. I will drop into your podcast inbox every Tuesday morning, and I will see you again next week.